Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's a midday magazine for Wednesday, May 20th, 2015. I'm Joe Vicnicki with the local news. Governor Bill Walker says he doesn't agree with legislators moving the special session from Juneau to Anchorage, but won't take steps to block them. Walker said his highest priority is getting a funded budget and said there's a risk in lawmakers taking actions outside of Juneau when the special session call is for the capital city. Floor sessions scheduled to begin tomorrow in Anchorage. State budget cuts are impacting a prosecuting attorney responsible for some court cases here in Petersburg. Borough Manager Steve Giesbrecht told the Assembly Monday that an attorney's position added to the Department of Law's office in Juneau has been eliminated.
We're expecting reduced services, going back to probably more how it was before. We don't know what the extent of that's going to be at this point yet.
The state added that attorney for the Juneau office in 2012 after Petersburg officials complained about short staffing in the district attorney's office, a high dismissal rate for court cases, and lack of communication with local police. In other news, Giesbrecht also reported the new collection truck for the borough's sanitation department wouldn't be delivered until late October or early November.
This pushes back the start of the Blue Cart program by a month or so. And we plan on working with Rigorous Trucking, the existing contractor who's been doing it, to see if they'll be willing to do a contract extension to take us until the end of the process when the truck and the carts are all here.
The borough will be switching from blue plastic bags and a private contractor to blue plastic containers and borough employees for the curbside pickup of recyclables at that time. Giesbrecht also reported on damage to the water line serving Petersburg's Middle Harbor following some big tides this spring. He said silt and mud from Hammer Slough buried the pipe, causing it to pull apart with the tide change. The manager said the problem would be fixed in the next couple of weeks, but said the harbor would have no potable water in Middle Harbor until that line is fixed. A rare thunder and lightning display caused a brief power outage yesterday afternoon in Petersburg. Power and Light Superintendent Joe Nelson reported that lightning hit a tree along with the transmission line and the distribution line for the local electric utility. Lightning strike was near Mitkoff Highway, 3.7 miles south of downtown, and around 3 in the afternoon yesterday. Nelson writes in an email that the transmission line bringing hydroelectric power to town did not suffer any apparent damage. However, a transformer serving customers near that site was damaged. Power and Light crews worked to replace that damaged equipment shortly after, and power was restored to Petersburg customers. Explorers Borge Ausland and Vincent Collier are in the midst of skiing the Stikine Ice Field in southeast Alaska and British Columbia. The journey is part of a decade-long project to traverse the world's 20 largest ice fields. So far, they've crossed masses in Patagonia, Chile, and in Svalbard, Norway as well. Two men started skiing on the Stikine Ice Field on May 9th. Beforehand, Lisa Fu joined them on an important excursion, a trip to the grocery store.
I find Borge Ausland and Vincent Collier in the baking aisle of Foodland IGA, standing in front of the oils. Ausland says they're looking for sunflower oil for breakfast.
Because we need to boost the porridge with some extra fat, because we need a lot of energy on this trip.
This is something they have to consider that other people normally don't. Does something have enough fat? Ausland struggles with this when looking for string cheese. He reads the nutrition stats on several.
I'll try these ones. Organic cheese strings. 16 of those.
One for each day. Ausland says the trip will likely take 12 days, but they're shopping for 16 to be safe. Ausland is 52 and from Oslo, Norway. He's done about 30 expeditions that have taken him to places like the North Pole, the South Pole, and the Himalayas. And he does them unsupported. That means no help along the way, no caches of food, even on months-long trips.
The longest trip I've done was when I crossed the Arctic Ocean solo from Siberia to Canada. It took me 83 days.
On that trip, he started out with more than 400 pounds of food and gear, which he carried on his back and pulled on a sled.
That's heavy.
For crossing the Stikine ice field, Ausland says they'll each be carrying about 120 pounds.
So this is lightweight, but we still have to be careful and take it seriously and, you know, do the right thing.
The idea behind the long-term expedition is to shed light on how climate change is affecting glaciers. They document their journeys with glacier measurements, notes, and photos. One of their sponsors, National Geographic, outfitted them with a video camera.
And we go out there to show the world what's happening and how it looks like. Because, you know, you can't just draw things on the map or listen and read to scientific reports. Someone has to visualize it. So we're not scientists, but we're the eyewitness to the climate change.
Ausland also sees these trips as a way to pass down knowledge to 29-year-old Collier. Collier is from France. He says he first communicated with Ausland, who he calls his hero, by email when he was 19.
One day I was harassing him that I really wanted to go on a trip with him on a sailboat around the North Pole. And he said, yeah, okay, we give you a chance.
Since then, Ausland has been Collier's mentor, friend, and expedition partner. Collier says he's learned the importance of preparation and how to be meticulous.
I saw him packing things. And everything is extremely organized, so when you're on the field, you don't think about where's this thing and where's the other.
He's learned it's important to practice the same steps of setting up and packing up camp over and over, even when the weather is nice and calm.
So when it's really windy and you're alone and you want to pitch your tent, you have to make sure that you have a nice procedure, because if you're in the middle, let's say, of an ice cap or Greenland or on the sea ice and you lose your tent is like the only refuge that you have, so you're done. If you lose a tent, you can just call for emergency.
What he's not so sure about at the moment is chocolate. He stands in front of dozens of choices and zeroes in on the milk chocolate Cadbury bar. I suggest the caramel bar.
No, nothing. No liquid inside.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, no liquid.
How about dark chocolate? You're more milk than dark?
Yeah, we need a little more sugar also. So,
He goes back to the milk chocolate Cadbury.
Do you think I can just open one and then I can pay and I can try it?
You must have had Cadbury, no?
Yeah, but not this one.
He opens the wrapper.
Yeah, that will do the job.
Besides chocolate, string cheese, and sunflower oil, Collier and Ausland's carts are filled with nuts, raisins, dry milk, beef jerky, toilet paper, and several bags of potato chips. Those get crushed into crumbs, then packed in individual Ziploc bags. For this trip, Ausland isn't bringing one of his standbys.
Normally I bake a cake, which is almond cake with egg cream, and I bring on the trip to celebrate the small victories, especially on the long trips. You know, there is always something to celebrate, my son's birthday, or when I'm halfway, or things like that. You need something to look forward to.
Of course, the real motivator is the journey itself, Ausland says, the adventure, finding out what's after the next curve, what's beyond the next ridge. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
And you can follow Ausland's and Collier's travels on the website icelegacy.com and read daily dispatches from the Stikine ice field. The pair look like they're right around the Great Glacier of the Stikine at the moment. Petersburg on Monday wrapped up a six-day Little Norway Festival, complete with music, dancing, and celebration under sunny skies. The annual event centers around May 17th, marking the signing of the Norwegian Constitution and the community's Norwegian heritage. It also marks Armed Services Day and a lull before the start of the busy fishing season. Here's more from Little Norway Festival this year. The Petersburg High School Drum Corps kept the beat in Friday's parade, while hundreds of PHS alumni from the classes of 1956 through 1973 marched along Main Street. And the next day at the festival pageant, Director of Ceremonies Tiffany Christensen recounted a history of the town.
Today, people of many cultures have made Petersburg the cosmopolitan place it is today. rooted in the immigrant experience and still sending the fish out to the world.
Governor Bill Walker was in town for his first visit, and he also attended the pageant.
Later this month, I have a dinner with the King of Norway. He is coming to Alaska, and I will explain to him he has come to the wrong part of Alaska because he needs to come and I don't need to go back to Norway because I've been here today. So I have picked up a lot of knowledge since I've been here, and so we'll have plenty of conversation. I will suggest the next time he comes to Alaska that he comes and we have dinner here in Petersburg. So.
This year's winners of the Norwegian American Award were Grant and Lila Trask. Festival Committee Chair Janet Holton read from the nomination for that award.
For decades, the Trasks have gathered, rehearsed, and presented the Little Norway Festival chorus that sings the Norwegian national anthem in that language and in English at the pageant. They are a great couple and always among the first asked to sing, dance, and carry the fun and laughter of our Norwegian-American heritage.
And I am very honored, as Lila is, to be part of this community. I came to work, but yet the people here are so precious. There's never a better place to live than Petersburg, Alaska. And so I'm glad that I stayed. I'm here for the people, and so is Lila. So thank you very much, Petersburg.
Another honor celebrated at the pageant came from David Booker, customer service manager for Alaska Airlines in Petersburg. He recognized Carrie Carmichael Case for winning the airline's photo contest this year with a photo of icebergs and her daughter Iris.
Carrie won the 2015 photo contest for all of Alaska Airlines. That is no small feat because people from all over the world submit photos to that contest. And she won, and she is on page 40 of the magazine, and then on the cover of Horizon Airline magazine is her winning photo. So we perhaps have maybe launched a modeling career as well. We don't know.
Case's photos have also been installed on the wall of the Petersburg terminal for that airline.
Eight stars of gold.
And in other news out of the festival, Jonathan Christ Tompkins of Sitka and Marquetta Eath of Petersburg won this year's Lop the Loop run on Saturday during the festival. Dozens of runners, walkers, and even rollerbladers and bikers competed in a 4.5-mile race around Haugen Drive, Sandy Beach Road, and North Nordic. Tompkins, Petersburg's representative in the State House, was the fastest overall runner with a time of 27 minutes and 24 seconds. Caleb Sprague came in just behind him on rollerblades. Keith Billy was the second runner in, followed by Cole Spurl. Marquetta Eath was the fastest female runner with a time of 33 minutes and 48 seconds. Michaela Newman was second and Rachel Kramer third. And Donnie Hayes won the biking division for children 8 and under. In other news from around Southeast, workers have closed Sitka's Centennial Hall after finding potentially hazardous material in an old door in that building. The Sitka Sentinel reports that building manager Don Cluding says the city is taking precautions in case that material is asbestos. Staff members sent a sample to the lab in Seattle for testing. Sitka City meetings are being relocated during the building closure. Wrangell's Stikine River Birding Festival celebrates the return of migratory birds to the river flats each spring. That festival brought bird enthusiasts and experts to town earlier this month for bird watching, lectures, and art contests. One of the festival's featured speakers presented research on how marine debris is affecting seabirds. Katarina Sostarek has more on that story.
Veronica Padula is a PhD candidate at the University of Alaska Anchorage, and she's trying to determine how plastic debris in the ocean affects seabirds in the Western Aleutian Islands. She says her project began because seabird populations there started declining, and no one knew why.
And so there are a couple of researchers out there asking different questions, and my question is related to whether or not marine debris is impacting these populations.
Padula showed her audience photos of animals that were visibly impacted by marine debris. A seal with a fishing net stuck around its neck, a bird wrapped in fishing line, and a dead albatross with a stomach full of plastic objects. But Padula's research is much more subtle.
Specifically, are the chemicals from marine debris getting into these birds' tissues? Because what we know from human research is that those chemicals are endocrine disruptors. And so they will mess with hormones and development and so on and so forth. So is that something that's playing a role in their decline?
The chemicals that Padula looks for in seabirds are called phthalates. They're a family of chemicals used to make plastic more flexible, and they can leach into the muscle and liver tissues of birds. Padula found those chemicals in all of the birds she collected in the West Aleutians, but only some birds had visible pieces of plastic in their stomach. Padula says these are still preliminary results from a small sample size, but it means all of those seabirds were exposed to plastic marine debris at some point in their lives. And she found this in a place where very few people live. Padula also found phthalates in seabird embryos, which means adult birds are passing small concentrations of those chemicals to their chicks. She hopes a long-term field study will help determine what that means for seabird populations.
There are good populations that we can have access to monitor the chicks, monitor fledging success and things like that, and sort of incorporate that with taking feather and blood samples from them and looking at contaminant levels in those tissues.
Padula says the health of seabirds can also indicate the health of the entire ecosystem.
Because they're at the top of the food chain in that particular instance, they are being impacted by what's happening below them in the rest of the ecosystem. And so it can give us this broader picture overall.
More researchers are turning their attention to phthalates. In humans, they're associated with infertility, breast cancer, and reduced brain function in babies. Another group of researchers is looking for phthalates in Pacific salmon. Padula says the best thing that people can do to minimize their impact is to use as little plastic as possible.
And that's a hard thing, right? Because there's plastic everywhere, and our lives, you know, and our culture is just sort of dependent on plastic. And what I really try and emphasize, especially when I walk into classrooms, is sort of start thinking about these choices you make in your everyday life.
Those can include not using plastic forks and straws and making more food from scratch to avoid plastic packaging.
I really try my best to convey how passionate I feel about it to others, and I hope that, you know, hope that people sort of pick up on that. And even if it's just one person saying, like, okay, I'm not going to use plastic bottles anymore, I will get a reusable water bottle. Cool. I've done my job.
Padula says she has a busy field research season coming up this summer. Reporting in Wrangell, I'm Katarina Sestarek.
And for KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.